This week, they're saddling up for the start of muster in the Top End. Despite the increased use of helicopters and motorbikes, horses are still one of the main tools of the trade when it comes to mustering in the north. Talking of horses, we hitch a ride in a horse-drawn carriage in central Queensland and meet former Melbourne school teacher Mary Farrer. She swapped cold Victoria for a new life as a governess in the Northern Territory.
I've been in Melbourne all my life, but I hate Melbourne winters. And I've said for many years, I'd really like to just escape Melbourne winters. Even now, my daughter rang up the other day. It's 14 in Melbourne at the moment. And it's about 27 here, sunny skies, beautiful. And she just laughs.
I mean, it's not that cold in Melbourne at that temperature. We will join Mary for her adventures very shortly. But let's start today in Western Australia, where our sceptical reporter, Anthony Pansia, lets curiosity get the better of him.
Close your eyes. That's it. That's it. Wonderful. You're doing great. You're going down deep, deep, deep down, as deep as is humanly possible.
If you found yourself behind a ute advertising both hypnosis and water divining services, you'd have to pull over and have a chat with the bloke inside, wouldn't you? Well, my interest was piqued when I came across water diviner and clinical hypnotist Ziggy Shetska in Manjimup, in the southwest of Western Australia.
Well, I do water divining for people on mostly who buy hobby blocks, subdivisions, and the nearest water pipe might be 20, 30 k's away, so they need water.
There is another part though.
Yes, there is, a more mysterious part. I'm also a clinical hypnotist, not a TV showman.
G'day, I'm Anthony Pansia. I have to admit to being a bit of a sceptic when it comes to water divining. I'm not sure about hypnosis either. I'm hoping Ziggy can explain how it all works, and more importantly, find out if anyone can do it.
When I was a little boy, the old boys used to get talking about using the forked stick, and my little ears would prick up and my eyes would be full of sparkles, and they'd put a penny in their lips or half a penny, and that was the way they did it, though I do it different. So I guess I've just had an interest right from my early childhood. And with the hypnotism, I was also interested as a child, but I didn't know how to approach it or what. I only knew what I seen on the TV shows. Until I come across a lady one day who came to a riding school, and she'd been to the Australian Academy of Hypnosis. I said, oh, where's that? Tell me all about it. And so I went, and I discovered that I'm very easy to hypnotise, and that I can hypnotise people and help them. I'm not into show hypnotism whatsoever.
Does it take a certain sort of person to be able to do those two things?
Well, that's a hard one to answer. I guess if you train correctly, I guess you can do it, yeah. But it helps if you've got a genuine interest in it, you know. So
it's not necessarily a spiritual or supernatural belief or anything like that. It's just something that one has learned how to do.
Yeah, no, it's not supernatural at all, though. A lot of people are spooked by hypnotism because of what they've seen, old guys controlling people. And I guess it's like the witch doctors used to point the bone at the people and they drop dead. Well, I mean, that's just hypnotism in another form. But no, it's not supernatural. Natural laws, application of natural laws and knowing what you're doing, you know, being taught.
Now, you're holding a couple of sticks in your hand. They actually do look like branches off a tree, but they do have a bit of a curve at the end of it. Can you describe exactly what they are and what they're used for?
Okay, so these are for divining. You can use any sort of twigs, but I don't use the fork stick. I don't like that. But these are a pair of cuttings from an almond tree. I got them when they were green, stuck them in the vise, and got binder twine and bent them so they're like a pair of pistol grips. So they're very comfortable to use for me like that. And yes, that's what I use for my divining. And I set myself back on the properties and I walk across and across this way, that way. And when the rods cross over, that's where I reckon the water is. So I belt a peg down with a hammer. And then I've got to try and divine how deep it is, which is various different methods. And whether it's fresh or salt, once again, or minerals in it that could harm you. And then I tell the owners to get a drilling rig and go for a drill.
What is your understanding of why the twigs cross?
I really can't answer that fully, but all I can say is there's as many theories why the twigs crossed or why pendulums swing and things as there are diviners who use them. Then would you like to have a try?
I think that I'm quite the cynic, so that would be good if I could have a shot. Yeah. So how about I'll give you the microphone.
Yeah. Okay, so I'll give you instructions. Now, get hold of one in each hand, comfortably, relaxed. Now, what I want you to do is think in your mind, in your head, that the rods are going to cross over when you walk across the fresh water. Tell yourself a couple of times before you start, in your mind, okay?
Yep, ready
to
go.
Were you ready to go? Let's walk on.
Okay, so we've come up to some water and my twigs aren't crossing.
No.
So is that something, that's me perhaps, or what are we?
I don't think you're going to make a water diviner, mate, sorry. Go stick to your job, yeah, journalist.
All right, well that's enough talk about the water divining. I'm obviously not good at that. So how about we have a crack at you hypnotising me?
All right, we'll do that.
Off we go, okay. All right.
So, all right, Anthony, you ready for a bit of hypnotherapy?
I'm ready.
Okay, so just follow my instructions and you'll be in a deep trance before you know it. So now just relax yourself, hang on hard on your microphone so you don't drop it when you go into a trance, and look into my eyes, mate. Keep looking, looking, and relaxing, and relaxing. And let your eyelids go heavy as I rock you gently. Close your eyes, that's it. That's it, wonderful, you're doing great. You're going down deep, deep, deep down, as deep as is humanly possible, into a wonderful, relaxing, hypnotic trance. Deeper, deeper down all the time. I'm going to go behind you and I'm going to tell you I've got two very powerful magnets in my hands. I'm going to hold them up against your ears and I'm going to pull you over backwards. You ready? Okay, here we go, here we go, here we go. Good, good, I've got you. Okay, fantastic. Right, now, back to normal. Don't fall over, for goodness sake. Yeah.
Okay. Whoa. Okay. That's pretty deep. What is it about the click?
Well, it's a real hard question. It's just the way we program ourselves. I guess I can say gently wake up and come back to your normal level of consciousness, because that's what I've done. I've altered your level of consciousness. But we like to click our fingers because I suppose it gets your attention more, doesn't it? You know, something like that. So that's what some of us do. I like to click my fingers instead of just saying wake up gently, gently, because some people don't want to wake up. They're just so wonderful, they just want to keep sleeping.
This is our harness. So we have a saddle, breeching, a cropper. I'm getting them used to having the cropper under their tail.
That's to say, it doesn't look very comfortable.
I wouldn't like one.
Uncomfortable, perhaps, but a necessary bit of kit if you're going to train your horse to harness. The adjustable leather strap fits snugly underneath the horse's tail and stops the harness gear slipping forward. Hello, I'm Lara Webster. I'm being given a crash course in harness driving by Jessica Pollard in her hometown of Clermont in central Queensland. Today she's getting Soxie, an experienced 14-year-old Clydesdale cross, ready for a run. It's taken years of training to get him to this stage.
Just long reining to start with. Getting him used to, we go from long reining to dragging a log.
And when you say long reining?
With our harness from the bridle, we have reins that go so we can stand behind them, probably a metre behind. And then just we follow them around like that, so they can't see us with when we put the winkers on. They can only see in front. So they learn how to walk forward, to trot, to stop, all on cues.
And we should probably introduce to the listeners here Soxie, who we've got beside us. Let's talk a bit about Soxie, because he's a whopping sort of a horse, isn't he, really?
He is. Soxie is a draft cross Clydesdale. He's about 17 hands. It's a little bit overweight at the moment. Where are you, buddy?
Where are you? Good boy.
He's 14 years old. Very old hand at this.
All right, we'll let you finish up getting this tack onto Soxie, and then we'll go for a bit of a ride, see what it's all about.
No worries. Okay, walk on. Walk on.
We are, in fact, going for a bit of a ride now. Just tell us how you steer and direct the horse, control the horse, I guess.
I use a lot of voice control instead of being Up on top when you're riding, you use your leg aids to help steer. But from back here, I have to use my voice so that he understands the instructions before I give him the cue with the rein to try and relay the message. It's like my voice I'm using instead of using my legs.
Say this feels almost in Sophie. I don't know if you feel the same, but it's almost kind of soothing, very relaxing, just sitting here.
Very relaxing, very soothing.
What is it about this that you love that's got you so hooked?
I've grown up around horses. I absolutely love horses. I come from my granddad used to have a bullock team, so the heritage is there with the harness. My granddad also used to break harness horses. He had an older mare that he was breaking in for mum's wedding, but she had an accident a couple of weeks beforehand and smashed his sulky, so mum had to improvise there. He's passed a lot of that on to myself and my sister. I started with a goat. I had a goat broken a harness. Dad made me a little sulky for that. Well, I did that for years. I used to take her over to the neighbour's place.
I have to say, there's something about hearing those hooves on the bitumen here, isn't there?
It's lovely and soothing. He got shod about 6 weeks ago, and one of his feet were very thin underneath from not being shod and being on black soil for so long. He had to get a metal plate put on the bottom of one front foot. So the clip clop we can hear now, he'd go clip clop clip clunk with this massive metal plate. So it used to sound very funny, but now it sounds really soothing again now with these all 4 feet shot the same.
Our carriage today is a modified open trailer with seating for up to 8. Jessica Pollard and her sister Caitlin Shilvock want to build up a successful tourist business offering scenic carriage rides around the town's lagoon. They're especially keen to encourage grain nomads to stop in their small mining town on their way through the Central Highlands. And so business so far, how's it going? Are the nomads coming?
We're still a little bit quiet with the nomads. We went for a run last week. We had one couple follow us half the way around the lagoon before they got in front of us, pulled up and then asked to take photos. And they asked if we did do wagon rides and stuff for them. So I haven't been able to get out much lately because of work commitments, but I'm trying to get out at least every afternoon to take the horses for a run, just to get out there and be seen, just to try and promote the business that way.
Good luck to Jess Pollard getting that business on the road in central Queensland. Lara Webster, the lucky reporter, getting a ride around the lagoon there. You're listening to A Country Breakfast on RN. Brett Worthington with you this week. Still to come, we're swapping Melbourne winters for life in the north, and we join horses and riders at the mustering camp on Wave Hill Station.
Ryan has a personality of a footballer, I think. He's quiet most of the time, but then he when he gets silly, like he just loses it. But he's pretty good most of the time.
My horse is Wawa. She's a painted horse. I don't really know too much about her background, but yeah, she's an alright horse. She has her temperamental moments.
The bond between horse and rider. It's important to have a good relationship, but it can be tricky to develop when you're just thrown together at the start of muster.
With me is Jenny. She's a 8-year-old stock horse sort of mare, and she's a good goer.
Oh no, this is Patchy. Don't know why she's called Patchy. She's got no white on her. But yeah, she's, well, I got given her because apparently she's a bit of a problem horse, and I love that. Love a bit of a challenge.
G'day there. I'm Dan Fitzgerald on Wavefield Station, 450 kilometres southwest of Katherine in the Northern Territory. Despite the increased use of helicopters, quad bikes and motorbikes across the country, horses are still one of the main tools of trade when it comes to mustering cattle in Northern Australia. These young riders have two horses to get them through the mustering season, one an older horse that knows the ropes, and the other a breaker a younger, less experienced horse. They'll spend hours together each day mustering mobs of cattle in their thousands for the next few months. For some, horse and rider are getting along really well. Others are relishing the challenge ahead.
My name's Tom Witham. I'm from southeast Queensland, and this is my first year ringing in the territory on Wayfield Station. Ryan, he's mainly Brummy, but he's just a stock horse, bay gelding, and he's about 7 year old. He goes all right, and he can work.
Good for long days in the paddock.
Yeah, no, he goes good. He goes good. I can't complain. Like the other day, I was mustering on him and I lost a shoe. It was on real rocky, hard country, and he still kept going. He's limping a bit, but he kept going.
It's a helicopter just coming in here now. How do they go around the helicopters?
Oh, this fella, he loses it a fair bit. He doesn't mind when the chopper's flying high, but when he's low, I get a bit bloody scared around.
Do you develop a bit of a relationship with your horse as you spend so much time with it?
I think you do. I've had him now for a bit over a month, and yeah, there's a bit of a bond going there. Yeah, I think it's pretty cool.
I'm Kerry and Brennan, a ringer from Wavehill Station. My horse is Wawa. She's a painted horse.
Yeah, it's a beautiful white with a lot big brown spots all over it. How would you describe the personality of Wawa?
Wawa's a bit of a spunky personality. Gotta love her. She's all lovely and cuddly when you got food, and then she sometimes just don't want anything to do with you. Bit spunky in a way.
It's pretty early in the morning here. You're just getting ready for a day in the paddock. What do you do to get your horse ready for the day?
Well, I'm giving her a bit of feed right now because her feed's a bit low, but basically I just check her feet and make sure when I saddle her up that there's no bindies or anything that's going to hurt her, because it's going to make her buck up and stuff. But basically just saddle her up and, you know, keep her ready for the truck.
Wait. Hi, I'm Dallas Poynton. I'm a ringer at Wave Hill, and with me is Jenny.
What sort of personality does Jenny have?
She has a laid back, but also she can also get into a goey mood when she needs to, when the cattle get out of line.
What does that mean, a goey mood?
She just wants to chase and have fun.
Does it take long to get to know a horse?
Not really. It just depends on which horse. Like, her and I have got more of a good bond pretty quick, but just depends on how well your horse and you get along well.
Have you had any hairy moments on Jenny?
A couple of times, only just under the when the chopper's coming in and blowing all the cattle across, and she doesn't really like choppers, but you just have to just hold on and get through it.
I'm Georgia Spain, and I ring her at Wave Hill Station. Righto, this is Patchy. She's pretty interesting. She has her days where she can be a real pig. And then other days where she's just an absolute champ and does what you want.
What sort of traits make her a problem horse?
Well, as you can see, she's got no shoes on. She's very hard to chew, apparently. So, yeah, doesn't like her feet being touched at all. Yeah, sort of rears up, strikes, all that. But, yeah, hopefully we can sort it out, put some shoes on her. Yeah, she'll be good. When you ride her, when you get on, she likes to have a bit of a buck. Just, I don't know why, but yeah, she just does it.
Is that something you can change in a horse?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, just a lot of work and time. And when you've got someone that knows what they're doing, makes it better, yeah.
And you don't mind being that person to straighten her out a little bit?
No, I do. I love it, yeah. I'm quite happy. I think it's good. Makes it fun for me too, so. No, but when you sort things out like that, like, you feel like you've accomplished something, you know, it's a bit of a win.
What sort of relationship have you developed with your horse?
Oh, at the start, she annoyed me. But right now, like, I sort of figured her out a bit. Like, if I get on, I warm her up, get her thinking. And then after that, she's pretty good. Yeah. No, she does what I want. Yeah. How we get along.
I'm from Melbourne. I've been a city girl. I've been in Melbourne all my life. So traded the two-door sports coupe car in for a big four-wheel drive, and off I went.
and school teacher Mary Farah has made it all the way to the Northern Territory. She's switched the bright lights and stresses of inner city living for a new life as a governess on a remote Top End cattle station. Hello, I'm Lydia Burton. Mary now calls a Mungie Mungie station near Daly Waters home. She admits she was looking for a new adventure when she saw Emma Brown's advertisement for a station teacher.
And I was just online one day and was Googling teaching jobs in the Northern Territory, and I happened to see a governess slash teacher role. Emma, the mum of the kids on a Mungie, really wanted a teacher because she felt her kids' education so important to her. So I sort of applied, and within 24 hours she had my resume, and within another 24 hours she'd rung me up and said, oh, and it was just fantastic.
And what do you make of your adventure so far?
I actually love it up here. My daughter and I took about a week to drive up. The people up here are just so friendly. Admittedly, I did arrive in the wet, and I've decided I don't like the mud. Squelching through the toes and splashing everywhere. I don't mind the dust here, but yeah, definitely not a wet season girl, I don't think.
What about the humidity and the heat in the wet season?
I actually quite like the humidity and the heat up here. I've been in Melbourne all my life, but I hate Melbourne winters, and I've said for many years I'd really like to just escape Melbourne winters. Even now, my daughter rang up the other day. It's 14 in Melbourne at the moment, and I'm, it's about 27 here, sunny skies, beautiful, and she just laughs.
You're in a classroom with three children. What's that like, going from a normal classroom to three kids on a station?
It's been a big learning curve for that one as well, especially the first couple of weeks. I'm used to a Victorian curriculum in the classroom and having a large say in how I teach. So the kids are learning through Catherine School of Air, so they send out the curriculum. So it was a big learning curve having three children at three different grade levels working on three different things at once. And the first couple of weeks I tried to structure it like I would as a teacher in Melbourne. It didn't work, so I've sort of had to readjust everything, but now it's working really well. We're sort of cruising and the kids are loving school.
What really made you think, yeah, I'm going to leave Melbourne and my normal teaching job and head to the Territory to be a governess on a station in the middle of nowhere, some would think?
I guess I chose to come up here. Well, first of all, I wanted to leave Melbourne. I just, at a stage of my life where I really wanted a different challenge. Sick of that, the traffic, the stress, the busyness of life, the huge expectations certainly in the education system. And I love the heat. My original idea was I wanted somewhere warm and by the beach. So I've sort of missed the beach bit, but certainly got the warmth.
Yeah, absolutely. What do people in Melbourne think about you coming up here?
They fall into two camps. Half of the people, oh, what a great adventure. Good on you. We want to really hear from you. And then the other half the people are sort of saying, what on earth are you doing? You're just crazy. Surely you don't want to go up there and do that. And a lot of people are sort of saying, what do you do on weekends? Don't you get bored? Don't you get lonely? And honestly, I don't think I've had a minute to myself. So that's certainly not the case.
So what would you say to anyone else who might be contemplating what their next move is, or if they are thinking, maybe the Territory, should I do it? What should I do?
I'd say definitely come up. Whether you're a teacher and you want to be a governess, or whether you just want to be a station hand or do something, yeah, the people are great, the weather's wonderful, but just the brand new experiences and just learning is just fantastic.
Some good advice from former Melbourne teacher Mary Farah if you're looking for a new adventure.